Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine, The Performing Arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with multidisciplinary choreographer Reisa Simpson, founder and artistic director of the San Francisco-based Push Dance Company, at special presentations this weekend at ODC Theater here in San Francisco. From the San Francisco Symphony's season-long celebration of the 100th birthday of composer Leonard Bernstein, we'll meet mezzo-soprano Isabel Leonard and bass baritone Ryan McKinney, who are performing in this weekend's Bernstein Centennial Concert. They'll be singing arias and barcaroles. Plus a chat with Lido Cantoruti, director and programmer of the 41st Annual Italian Film Festival of Marin County in San Rafael. Lido's been leading those film festivals for 39 of those 41 seasons. Stay with us. Push Dance Company kicks off its 12th home season this weekend with Push Fest, a mixed genre showcase of dance works at ODC Theater. The season will feature three world premieres, including Mothership Part 2 by my guest, artistic director Reisa Simpson, new works by Mary Carbonara for Dancers Performance Project, company member Kauve Saipan and company member Katerina Wong, and performance by local artists like the Anata Project, Kendra Kimbrough, and others, and some visiting artists from New York and Sacramento. It's a pleasure to welcome back Reisa Simpson, whose work has been performed in some 50 venues across the country. Reisa has been honored with the Magritte Mondavi Award, Choreo Project's People's Choice Award, the Bad W's Choreographer of the Year in 2012, and Attain in association with the Hewlett Foundation. Welcome back, Reisa.
Hi, thank you. Hello, KALW, and David, thanks for having me back.
Of course. Well, let's first give what criteria do you use for both selections of dancers and companies for the Push Fest?
Well, criteria is new ideas. We're looking for choreographers that are innovating works and as well as collaborating with different artists. So we open it up to a nationwide search, and it is a national festival. And this year we have two groups coming from New York, Jamal Jackson and Rebecca McCormick from Core Dance. They'll be in our Program B.
So what was it that struck your fancy about their submission?
Well, I like to look at works that sometimes, you know, will translate well into the ODC space. And, you know, a choreographer can submit a rehearsal video. And it's up to our panel, myself, to also just kind of reimagine the work on a larger stage.
Okay. When did you see their work first?
Oh, that's a good question. I saw Jamal's work many times, actually, on video. And for Rebecca, her work was new for me. And for a lot of the choreographers, we have some new faces, but also some people that have been in the festival before. Tanya Chinese is one of our artists who was in our very first festival. And Mary Carbonara is returning with a new group. And so is Layli Venkat. So when looking at the work, some, you know, pieces I like to just, you know, kind of be serendipitous about. And it's not always the person that has the best quality video, I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
Very open to videos that are just sort of sketch ideas, but yet are in creation and in the works that are upcoming. And I just feel like the choreographer has a very distinct voice and is great at storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Mary Carbonara, who's sitting in the wings quietly. Let's talk about her contribution, which will be on the Program B, which is Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 7:30.
Yeah, in fact, we were just shortly discussing it. Mary is an outstanding choreographer, and her work is very well known throughout the Bay Area. And what she's doing, when I mean she's working with a new group, is that she has a group of experienced amateurs that want her to choreograph on them. So she's going into a new process as a choreographer and finding out ways that her process can be modified in order to help these young artists reach the stage. And her process is quite similar to what Gal Vaisafon is doing. He's doing Push Lab. And he, again, is working with young performers, in this case, students from Alonzo King Lines Dance Center, who have signed up for a workshop called Push Lab. And they have about eight rehearsals to pull together a piece, and he has about 14 or so people, so it's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, those performances of Mary's piece will be on the program B, along with the visiting New York troops, Jamal Jackson and Rebecca McCormick. One of the highlights you did mention includes the return of Bay Area, let me see if I can get this right, Bharatanatyam performer Lali Venkat on the program A, which is tomorrow evening at 8 and Sunday at 4:30. What is Bharatanatyam? How'd I do?
I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Okay.
I mean that's a hard act to follow. You know, it's classical Indian dance, and Lali came to us as a solo artist, and now she's doing a trio. Did I say a trilo? A trio.
That could be a new form of dance.
Yeah.
I think you could patent that one. A trilo.
So I'm excited to see how exactly she's able to translate her solo performance onto different bodies. And, you know, just her taking so many chances on this. And she's going to open program A. So I will admit, you know, as a curator, I give the artists a lot of trust. And she submitted her video as a solo artist and then mentioned that she was going to make it a trio. So I have yet to see it.
All right. And she's based in Fremont, coming down for, the program A, September 22nd, tomorrow at 8 and Sunday at 4:30. Program B is Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 7:30. We're talking about the Push Fest at ODC Theater with Artistic Director Raisa Simpson. So tell me a little bit, let's move on to your main highlight. Let's give a listeners a reminder of your concept of the Afrofuturistic piece, Mothership, and then we'll see what we're doing for part two. Concept for Mothership. It's your work, Raisa. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, I paused for a second because I just feel like there's so much going on in the country, especially with, you know, a lot coming out of the White House about the rhetoric around getting rid of national funding where once that was always supported.
Right. Well, that that I'm sure played into influence for part two. But part one,
yeah.
What was your original Afrofuturistic? Just give me a concept of what that means to you.
Well, in terms of Afrofuturistic, for part one, I was looking at the past, and I was looking at what made America great, but not what made it great again.
Good clarification there.
Yeah, so I was looking at this dystopian world where people, especially people of color, were dressed up as founding fathers because that was the only history that they knew, sort of this revisionist history where things like slavery as well as the genocide of Native Americans and the lack of women's rights were not really talked about, but yet we were celebrating this type of history that didn't have civil rights or other, particular movements that create an inclusive society. So looking at that was, for me, kind of almost comical, and that's how I created the piece, you know, just these folks in wigs running around and dancing, but not completely aware that their future, is one that, I mean, we could potentially have. I'm glad that all these monuments are being taken down.
Interesting, yeah. And so contemporary events have been influencing Mothership Part 2 then?
It's true, yes. Mothership Part 2 is a complete flip, and it's looking at the present. So It's, for me, Afrofuturism is looking at this sort of like paradigm where if African Americans or black people of African descent were not considered human, maybe we are aliens. So now we have indigenous people who, kind of like a uncontacted tribe, are now in outer space, and they are traveling through different solar systems to find their planet.
Okay.
Ooh,
well,
I know,
are
I know.
Some of the same dancers involved? Are some of the same gestures that people saw in Mothership 1 going to be seen in Mothership 2?
That is the fun part, yes. A lot of the dancers are returning. So if you saw Part 1, you saw them in the colonial, you know, garb and wigs. And this year, you'll see them in a lot more, I guess I would say, traditional, I would say, indigenous wear. That I wanted to go that route versus the other colonial route, just to see, like, you know, what would happen if the Native Americans won? Like, what would happen to America? Yes, like, we're guests here and we would be invited to be in America, but it was really run by the people who were originally here. So I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that, you know, people of color will be in space. I know sci-fi movies, you know, the lack of representation is always there for people of color. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to just sort of, again, reimagine this place and this dance and this abstract world, which I will say everyone should see, because I did the multimedia for this and I spent so much time on the computer. I don't want to look at a computer for another year.
Making American Choreography great again. It's Raissa Simpson and her Mothership 2, which will be featured on Friday's performance or Saturday's?
On all of the performances.
Oh, great. Okay. Yes. Excellent. And we're going to go out with some of the music from Mothership. Tell us about the music you're using or was created for this.
I made the music, and I have a celloist named Unwoman who did the last portion of the music. But the very first half, you'll hear my composition.
And we have some tickets for Friday's opening night performance. 8 p.m. for people who call 415-841-4131. I'm sorry, 4134. Let's get the number right, at least. 415-841-4134. Five pairs of tickets, I believe we have. Three pairs of tickets. Oh, so we're down to three pairs that are available for Friday evening's performance, 8 p.m., ODC Theater. Thanks so much for coming in, Raissa, and we'll see you again for next year's festival.
Thank you so much, David.
ODC Theater is on 17th Street here in San Francisco. Tickets for that opening night performance. Looks like we have three lines lit up already. Sorry, folks. Enjoy the performance, though. You can learn more about the festival at pushdance.org. Music featuring Unwoman, the cellist. Music by Risa Simpson, presented as part of her Mothership presentation at ODC Theater, part of Push Fest. Information at pushdance.org. A little music venio morricone to set the mood for my next guest. Who better to act as spokesperson and director of the 41st Italian Film Festival since taking a leadership role back in 1980 than Lido Cantarutti? Lido's family is from the Friuli region of Italy. He himself grew up in the Bay Area, attending UC Berkeley, serving as a U.S. Army officer, and dove into keeping Italian cultural activities alive and well in Marin and beyond, offering a very entertaining approach to the film festival, especially, which he's directed 39 of which, and it opens this Saturday with screenings over the next several weekends. Lido was selected as the 2016 recipient of the Marin Cultural Treasure Award by the Marin Center and spent 30 years as a volunteer master of ceremonies for the Marin County Fair. In 2015, Lido was acknowledged by the President of the Republic of Italy with the promotion and conferral of the title, and I'm not going to massacre the Italian here, the Knight Commander of the Order of Merit of the Republic of Italy. Commendatore, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you very, very much, and you got the title just right, Commendatore.
Commendatore.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
The only Commendatore I remember is from Don Giovanni, so it's...
I think I knew him well.
I think he'd look well in a statue and on a horse, I think. Well, the festival kicks off this Saturday with a comedy. Tell us about Belli di Papi.
So we start this Saturday with Belli di Papa. It's a story of a very wealthy businessman in Milano, and he has newly becomes a widow. His wife dies, and he's got three adult children who he wants to teach a lesson to. He wants to teach them the real value of work and the value of money, because they're very wealthy. He's done very well in his own business. And to do that, he comes up with a scheme based on pretending that the family enterprise has gone broke, and the kids are shocked. They're shocked, but he uses this mechanism to start teaching them a lesson about getting a job, going to work, and appreciating the value of what they've earned. The comedy is very good. It's subtle, and it's very well done, and it's led by one of Italy's great, great actors, who was actually the star of one of Italy's Oscar-winning films. He was the star of Mediterraneo some years ago. He is Diego Abatantuono, a big, big star in Italy.
Well, you're a one-man band of sorts in presenting this festival, as we talked about off-air. How did you find and select the particular films for this year's festival?
That's a very good question. That's one of the hardest parts of the festival, not only selecting them, but sourcing them, getting them. So it's almost a year-long process, David, scanning what's available, what's received awards in Italy and elsewhere, mm-hmm. talking to other festival promoters, talking with them, and then taking a look at them myself, every single one of them. So I will have previewed for the 8 selections that I'm doing this year something like 40, 45 films. Some of them are not so good. Some of them are quite good. The 8 are the best.
There you go. And they're all new films, or relatively new films. Has the film festival ever discussed a retrospective of some other classics or honorees in that way?
I'm ready at any time to do the great classics that Italian cinema has produced over the years. We have done that over the years. Yes, we did it some number of years ago. Films like The Bicycle Thief, films like Rome Open City. A number of the Il Postino we did.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the Fellini films we did. I'm a great admirer of Federico Fellini.
Yeah.
And then we did those, and they become harder and harder to source. So we started moving on. I would to the more modern, recent films. But like I said at the outset, I'm ready at any time. Any of those films are worthy of being presented at any time. They're classics. They are works of art. And I would be happy to do it again.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, this year's focus is on some contemporary films, which you have a nice variety of both comedy, dramas,
yeah.
and a charming documentary. Tell us a little bit about Sea Dreaming Girls.
You happen to have picked the one. I love this. I adore this film. I adore it because, yes, charming documentary. 12 80-year-old ladies who live in a spectacular mountain village in the Trentino area of Italy. They're friends, they're all widows, and they talk among themselves. You know what? Here we are up in the mountains, it's beautiful here, but we've never been out of this village in a country that is surrounded by beautiful oceans and beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Maria, have you ever seen the ocean? No, I never have. What about you, Ermida? Have you ever seen? No? Well, I'll tell you, my husband was going to take me when we got married 65 years ago, but we never made it because we didn't have the money. Would you like to go? Yeah, I would. The story is about how they work together as friends to make a plan, raise the funds, and make a plan to get themselves, for the first time in their lives, to the beach, to the ocean. And it's a spectacular story. It's about their ingenuity and their cleverness to get this done.
Well, I'm going to give away one aspect of the film. One of their schemes to raise money is to have to do the classic model calendar.
They did try. They do try that. So
what's even funnier is that this is an actual documentary. It's not just an amusing story.
True story. And they did the calendar. They did. It was a big failure.
Wasn't exactly the Barahunks or the firemen of New York City, was it?
Well, what happened was, at the same time they were doing theirs as 12 80-year-old women, the firemen of the village were doing their annual picture calendar. That one sells. Theirs didn't.
Let's talk a little bit about the spectacular growth this festival has seen. I believe you're expecting upwards of 5,000 people to come through for this festival.
Oh, my. It's wonderful. I'm happy because it gives more people an opportunity to see what Italian movie making is all about these days. We started out with like 25 people the first year we did the film festival. And we thought, well, that's pretty good. Next year we had 50 people. Oh, that's even better, we thought. And each year, we seem to have gotten a great response from the outset that people really are admirers of Italian movie making. Especially here in the Bay Area, David, we have an audience that is very much looking for films of great quality. So we kept working this. We kept showing films and seeing that people were responding in greater numbers every year. So it grew. It grew to where we were having a couple of hundred, then a couple of 300. Now we're doing two shows a night, two screenings a night. And we will have this Saturday night, it takes my breath away, we'll have 700 people there to show Saturday night.
It's fantastic.
Quite wonderful. A wonderful night. It's not about numbers, but it's about more people coming to enjoy what they are looking for. Great films.
Mm-hmm. And you've kind of settled in now past several seasons at the Showcase Theater in San Rafael.
Yeah, we have. It's a good venue for us, about the right size. It has a seating capacity around 350, the seating is located situated in an arc or in a semicircle, nicely oriented towards the screen. It works well for us. Nice, intimate, great place for Italians to meet.
Well, tell us a couple other highlights of films that you discovered.
Well, so we got, I suppose, the biggest smash hit that we have here from the current production in Italy is our closing night show, In Love, at War for Love. This is the follow-on to 2 years ago. The big hit was The Mafia Kills Only in the Summer. It was a big, big hit in Italy and here. This director, Pief, as we know him, Pier Francesco Di Liberto, has now done a sequel that has been even more successful. This is a highlight because it is brilliantly bringing together love story, some comedy, and some pretty serious stuff about the mafia in Sicily. And it's set in the World War II era when the U.S. was invading Sicily. And that's why you see in the publicity for this film American Army uniforms and colors, because the star, who is Pief himself, is in love with a young lady there now in New York, and he's got to get back to Sicily to ask for her hand in marriage of her father. In order to do that, he joins the army. It's a hell of a film. It's a brilliant film. I love that film. And then I would say, I would call attention to the one that we're doing on September 30th. Very funny. An Almost Perfect Town. Very funny film about a little southern town that needs to improve some of its features.
And the plight of many towns in post-war Italy.
Absolutely. So they try to do it by perfecting the features that they offer in the town. Even though the town, its employment has disappeared because the mines have closed there. But they work it out, and the way they go about it, very funny and creative Italian approach. And they make it. They make it.
And it's a contemporary story. I mentioned World War II, post-World War II, but it's a new story of this
yes,
town
it is.
Trying to make
yes.
it an almost perfect town. That's great.
It's a wonderful show.
So you have a very personal approach to the film festival. It's almost a family atmosphere that you create. And it's
that's important. Because it's not just going to see a movie. It's not. This is a film festival in the fullest sense of the word. I am there every night to greet people. We offer them food and snacks as a treat. I like to give people things when they come that we're going to have this year. They're going to be surprised to see. Everybody at one of the shows is going to get a bocce candy, a chocolate candy. They'll get one of those with their love forecast note in there. Everything's very cool. And then on another night, we'll give them the almond nougat candies called Torrone. We'll give them one of those. We greet them. We make them feel welcome. The theater seating is situated such that they feel like they're brought together. So yes, we try to create that and sustain it throughout the showing.
All the screenings are at the Showcase Theater in San Rafael.
Yep.
You can find out all of the details about the films at italianfilm.com, but I understand that you can also get some advanced tickets by going to marincenter.org, because some of these screenings may sell out. You might want to keep in
that's
mind
a good,
that.
That's a good point. Very good point.
And Lito, I look forward to maybe catching one or two of them. I'll have to keep something open in my calendar to make it out to San Rafael.
Please, it would be wonderful to have you.
Come back again to tell us about the 2018 festival. Already, probably already in the planning stages, something tells me.
The dates for sure.
Coming to Dori, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me again.
From plucked mandolins to plucked violins. Tomorrow officially begins the San Francisco Symphony's year-long tribute celebrating the centenary of Leonard Bernstein's birth. Throughout the season, audiences will be treated to a broad variety of the composer's concert and musical theater works, including his Symphony No. 2, the aptly subtitled The Age of Anxiety. Actually, not written after the election, but in 1948... and named for the W.H. Auden long poem of the same name. Candide in January, a West Side Story screening with live orchestra in February, among other works. This weekend's kickoff includes the symphonic dances from West Side Story, prelude, fugue, and riffs featuring clarinetist Carrie Bell, and the arias and barcaroles, which were last performed here in San Francisco in 2005 with Nathan Gunn and Jennifer Eilmer. I caught up with the two singers who will be involved in these concerts singing arias and barcaroles the other day at Davie Symphony Hall. Isabel Leonard and Ryan McKinney will be singing Bernstein's work, arias and barcaroles. Here is that conversation. Welcome back to the symphony. Having heard you as Claire in another Bernstein concert production on The Town in 2016, our San Francisco audiences have also been treated to your talents across the street in the 2013-14 production of The Barber of Seville, not to mention stages and opera houses around the country and around the world. Welcome back to San Francisco.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
And Ryan, you're making your San Francisco Symphony debut with these performances in a season that will also see your debut across the street for the highly anticipated John Adams premiere of Girls of the Golden West.
Very excited to be here for both of those things.
So when were you guys first exposed to the music of Leonard Bernstein? Was it everyone's entree West Side Story, or...
I'm not even sure I remember when, because it would have been something that I probably grew up with. So it probably just entered my ear as early as it could have. And it was most likely West Side Story. And then, you know, as time went on, all the other musical theater pieces that he's so well known for. And just continued hearing him throughout my whole life.
How about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I definitely think West Side Story was probably, I think I saw it on television or something as a kid. But I didn't know that much about Bernstein, but then had the opportunity. Actually, we have a funny story about this. Isabel and I were in the chorus together of Candide when they did it on Broadway, and they broadcast that. And that was actually one of my first... That same year we did that, and then I also did Sam in Trouble in Tahiti. And so kind of dove right into Bernstein at that point.
Did you guys even know each other back then?
Well, we went to Juilliard together,
we
were friends. We were actually, our group of friends still is very much in touch.
Yeah.
And this work, Airs and Barcaroles, has a very personal connection with MTT, having one of the movements dedicated to him. Did he give some special insight into how to approach that particular movement? Tell us about the movement I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, this is a movement set to a poem in Yiddish, talking about a fiddle player at a wedding. And it's kind of beautiful and a little bit mournful, but also funny. You know, it was interesting to work with him on it knowing that. But, you know, we sort of just treat it like Bernstein music. But I think that, you know, he sort of has a sort of twinkle in his eye when he's conducting it. So, no, it's great. It's great to be working on it with him.
Did he share any personal insight about the work as a whole or some of the other movements?
We did talk a little bit in particular about the, call it aria or song that I sing called Little Smary, and how, you know, Leonard's mom wrote the text, and how it's very much a kid's story, or or an adult telling a kid sort of a warning story of sort. And so I can, of course, relate. Ryan and I can both relate. We both have kids. And so that's sort of a fun thing to play around with.
Yeah, and also the just the insight of kind of the couple when they first sing together, having this sort of, they're playing kind of a weird word game together. But underneath all of that, you know, he was talking about the kind of tension between their, you know, in their relationship, and how they sort of are saying things that aren't really in the words, that's kind of, you know, sort of dealing with each other and not in a not totally open way.
Isabel, I mentioned that you had sung in the On the Town production here with Michael Tilson Thomas. Ryan, have you worked with the maestro at all before?
Yeah, we worked together on Oedipus Rex, Stravinsky, in Chicago many years ago. I think Bill Burden was singing the Oedipus, and it was my first time to work with him, and he's just so brilliant with that set, especially that kind of rhythmic, energetic stuff. And it's interesting because this is so different from that, to work on this with him after all these years. So it's really great to work with him again.
So how did these particular roles
in this particular work come about? Did the symphony or MTT approach you saying, hey, we're going to do this big Bernstein year? Or was it the folks on your end of things pushing things?
Well, I think in my case, I think it just sort of came about as a lot of these things tend to come about, where you know, we'll get an inquiry from a symphony or from a conductor or from an opera house, and they'll say, we're doing this in this coming season, and are you interested? Are you available? And a lot of things really truly happen that way. And sometimes they are, you know, the impetus comes from the other end, comes from our end. But I'd say for the most part, particularly with, you know, with these big events, especially like a year like this one, it's all their programming, and then they are they're looking for, you know, who can do it, and luckily, you know, MTT is you know, he's just the best. So if he comes to you and he says, hey, will you do this, you go, yes, I absolutely will. I don't know it, but it's I'm gonna know it.
that's a great spirit to have. So you also mentioned that on this program that there's going to be the symphonic dances from West Side Story, but you're going to be doing a production of West Side Story at some point. Where is that going to be?
It's actually just in 2.5 weeks or so down in Philly. We're doing, I suppose it's called a semi-stage production. I'm not entirely sure. I know that there are all sorts of obstacle courses and hoops to go through with the Bernstein estate, and once those things are all smoothed out, I'd have a better idea. But it's exciting because, as you know, as we said before, it was one of the first pieces that I had been introduced to many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I also covered the part of Maria when I was in high school, and so of course since then I've sort of coveted to sing Maria, and I've been waiting for the opportunity, and it's finally here in a rather fast and swift pace, but it's here nonetheless. So
that's nice. I was actually an assistant conductor for West Side Story, so I know the feeling of wanting to have that happen. Well, we're not going to be missing you for very long, because on the 1st of October you're going to be here as part of the San Francisco Performances Series at Herbst Hall with pianist John Arida, also in an all Bernstein concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
What are you going to be singing on that?
Oh my gosh!
Some highlights, maybe.
Some highlights, yeah. There's quite a lot. I'm kind of going, wait, that might be too much. some good highlights. Well, I was just talking to Ryan right now about a song called "So Pretty," which is a beautiful, it's like a 2-page gem, which at the time was in reaction to the Vietnam War. But the words themselves are beautiful, and for me, any recital has to do with the storytelling and the words that you're communicating to the audience. And this particular song is just beautiful in my mind. But there's some other really fun ones and things that people are going to recognize, and I think other things that are less well known. So hopefully there's a good mix of the two.
Maybe Ryan can make a guest appearance as Tony or something to surprise you.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually. Take some pressure off of me. Thank you very much.
Why not? Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Jump right in.
Well, Ryan, in addition to a lot of Wagner, this summer a fantastic production at Bayreuth of Parsifal, which Tony Tomasini of the New York Times said a daring performance by American-based baritone Ryan McKinney. A lot of Wagner in your calendar, both past and forthcoming, but also some lighter things. Billy Bigelow for Glimmerglass, I believe, and Carousel. So are you trying to keep a balance of the musical end of things and the heavy operatic roles? Or
yeah, I think anybody that wants to sing for a long time tries to sort of balance their repertoire so they're not doing too much of one thing, especially if you're not, you know, the kind of voice that can only do one thing, or that does, you know, if you're a queen of the night, that's kind of what you do.
I don't think that's quite for you, though.
It's not quite for me. But in my case, I've sort of been lucky to, I mean, I love Wagner and I love singing Wagner, but I also really love doing new things. And so that's been kind of my big, two big activities over the last couple of years and over the next few is doing new, brand new or new-ish pieces, and then also a lot of Wagner. So I'm happy with that mix. I think it keeps me kind of emotionally and mentally stable. Too much Wagner can be a little tough on your on your brain, but also just vocally, it's nice to stay fresh with this kind of stuff.
Likewise for you.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's definitely you know, even in planning a recital, you, and that seems like a smaller sort of scope of time, but you want to organize the music in such a way that you are never sticking your voice in one place over and over and over and over again, because it's just sheerly taxing. So short amount of time, long amount of time over the course of years, you try to do the same thing.
Well, very exciting that, Ryan, we're going to be hearing you again for the John Adams work. I know that when I talked with John recently, he was saying how the opera was anxious for them to get the music to the singers. Has all the music arrived? And can you give us a little bit of a preview of your particular role?
Yeah, we've had the music for several weeks now, which is good. We had actually workshop period just a few weeks ago here in San Francisco. That was just really amazing for everybody. It's really an ensemble cast. No one part feels more important than another. And there's it's a great group of young singers. And Peter Sellers, anything Peter Sellers has anything to do with just has such enthusiasm and energy with it. My part, I have some really great music. I kind of play this sort of boastful minor guy who talks about how awesome we all are to be here doing this amazing manly thing. Of course, then he does all these awful things to women and to minorities, and that's sort of a big chunk of the story. One really cool moment I get is in these mining towns, I used to do a lot of Shakespeare's entertainment, and so Peter has mixed in some Shakespeare bits into the libretto, and so I get to sing one of Macbeth's monologues, or a setting of it, which is kind of at this pivotal moment in the show, and it's really very exciting. And the music, I think everyone will love the score. It's just incredible.
So we'll hear some Adams Macbeth rather than Verdi's Macbeth.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, we look forward to seeing you that in that role. Isabel, I should mention that your new album with the guitarist Sharon Isbin is available at your website, isabelleonard.com. And we look forward to your recital at Herbst Hall, and for both of you to come and chat with us again.
Great, thanks.
Thanks so much for having us.
The All Bernstein concerts are tomorrow and Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2. And on the program, Symphonic Dances from West Side Story, the Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs, not played by the San Francisco Symphony since 1994 when Alasdair Neil conducted with David Breeden as soloist. Carrie Bell will be the featured clarinetist for the Riffs portion of Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs. The Chichester Psalms will be performed as well with the San Francisco Symphony Chorus, Ragnar Bolin director, with boy soprano Nicholas Hu. Also, actors Matt Herrero, Jack O'Reilly, speaker Humphrey Burton. Now, for some valuable insight in the special relationship between Michael Tilson Thomas and Lenny Bernstein, be sure to catch the pre-concert talks with Bernstein scholar Humphrey Burton and Michael Tilson Thomas at 6:30. That's free, of course, to ticket holders. The arias and barcaroles, as I mentioned, will be sung by my guests you just heard, Isabel Leonard and Ryan McKinney. We're going to hear a recording that MTT did with the London Symphony and soloists Friederike von Stade and Thomas Hampson, and the love duet from Leonard Bernstein's arias and barcaroles.
Is it art or minimal music or classical or popular song? come of them wrong? What does it tell us?
What should it tell us?
How are we to know it?
How to know it?
If or when or why or whether it will stop or go on?
Must it go on?
Will it go on?
Must it go on?
Will it?
Must it?
Question.
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 About this song.
Going to last how long?
Last conventionally.
Time then to modulate
to the so-called second day.
Sequentially
to the third.
Questing.
Do you love me?
Question. What shall we name the baby? Why can't I give up smoking? Why are the nations raging? Am I aging?
Question. Why not skip this election? Should I discard my lover?
Why are the natives restless?
Aren't all these questions pointless?
How come we've stuck together?
We're so clever. Question, don't you get sick of triads?
Triads be real relaxing.
With this sudden accent,
Jesse Jackson. This is a conversation.
Instead of a subject matter,
subject
your aesthetics.
Oh, yes, the nature of song,
and
content and form,
a mystery,
and now scary the way it flows as if it knows. Mystery, scary the way it grows and grows incessantly.
Unevenly,
almost as if it
had a mind of its own.
How shall we end it?
Very good question.
Shall we sing a charming?
Sing a lady.
Coda of ravishing beauty that will vanish away.
Empty cliche, why not just stop it?
How can we stop it? Look how comforting and
repetitious.
Beautiful but repetitious, let it stop.
Stop. Stop.
The Love Duet from Leonard Bernstein's 1988 work, Arias and Barcaroles. In that recording, we heard Frederica von Stade and Thomas Hampson with Michael Tilson Thomas leading the London Symphony. MTT leads the San Francisco Symphony this weekend, tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday, tomorrow and Saturday at 8, let me rephrase, Sunday at 2 in an all Bernstein program. And the soloists will be Isabel Leonard and Ryan McKinney for Arias and Barcaroles, a work that had its title courtesy of none other than President Dwight Eisenhower. Apparently following a White House concert in 1960, at which Bernstein appeared as conductor and soloist in Mozart's G major piano concerto and Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, Eisenhower hazarded a stab at music criticism. Referring to the Gershwin, he informed Bernstein, "I like that last piece you played. It's got a theme. I like music with a theme. Not all them arias and barcaroles." And that kind of stuck in Lenny's head for titling his work from 1988. More information about the symphony's performances are at sfsymphony.org. Last season, I had the good fortune of performing with the Peninsula Symphony on flute and piccolo for a performance of Gustav Holst's amazing work, The Planets. It happens to be Gustav Holst's birthday today. born September 21st, 1874, lived until 1834. In addition to his best-known suite, The Planets, he composed a large number of other works across a great range of genres and some wonderful band music that is a staple of most bands across the country today and really around the world. His music was generally neglected until the 1980s when recordings of much of his output became available. As far as The Planets go, he conceived the idea in 1913. That's partly as a result of his interest in astrology. And I thought, as a little tribute to the demise a week ago Friday of the Cassini exploratory craft that had its fiery end last Friday, I'd play Saturn, where Cassini had its end. For this movement, Saturn, he subtitled it The Bringer of Old Age. Holst used a previously composed vocal piece as the basis for the movement, where repeated chords represent the relentless approach of old age. Farewell, Cassini, and happy birthday, Gustav Holst. Here is Saturn from The Planets. a musical tribute to the Cassini spacecraft, launched in 1997 from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida, arriving in Saturn in 2004, a mission that was extended twice, first for 2 years, and then for seven more. Cassini meeting its end in the atmosphere of Saturn, the music that you're hearing now from Birthday Boy Gustav Holst, from his work, The Planets. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air. Next week, among my guests will be Marilyn Levinson. The Bay Area Cabaret kicks off this Sunday with an Ella Fitzgerald centennial celebration. Speaking of centenarians, Leonard Bernstein as well. Well, Ella is featured on Sunday at 7 o'clock, featuring five stunning ladies of song, Lilias White, Janice Siegel, Frida Payne, Sonny Holland, and Amanda King. Marilyn Levinson will be here next week to talk about the full season of Bay Area Cabaret, which includes concerts by Brian Stokes Mitchell and Jane Lynch. So more from Marilyn next week about Bay Area Cabaret. But you might want to catch the Ella tribute this Sunday night. BayAreaCabaret.org for more information. KALW.org for more information about us. David@KALW.org if you'd have a show suggestion. My thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing the show. This is KALW San Francisco.